Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday edition, or as I like to say, the Wednesday edition of Don't Brass. That starts right now on your Voice of Barbados, your 92.9 FM. I'm your host and moderator, Corey Lane. We go until 2 p.m. this afternoon for the fourth day of November, 2020. We're beginning to wind up this very interesting year called 2020, like none other. Well, today, as we like to say, is the day after the day before. The U.S. general elections, presidential, Senate, and House. And I know some of you, as we start to talk about this, would ask, you know, what does this have to do with us? That is the U.S. And we have no impact whatsoever on the results. But the fact is that the results can have an impact on us. And therefore, I want to take at least the first segment of today's program to take an in-depth look at what these results, or lack thereof, can mean for us here in the Caribbean, and more so specifically in Barbados. One of the things I have observed following this election, and I must admit, I started to follow the whole thing in the U.S. for a break, a distraction from my own current affairs here in Barbados, and for some comedy relief. But I think the joke has ended some time ago. One of the things I want to look at is the sentiment. It truly is there. There's a reckoning within the U.S. The reason that we have to pay attention to these things is that the economic situation, the U.S. is tied up in the global economy as one of the number one global economy. It is a source market. It is known as the land of opportunity. It is the melting pot. As Emma Lazarus said, you know, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearn to breathe free. That humanitarian vision that the U.S. had, you know, when we have this reckoning as an empire, a lot of that impacts. As you know, many of you, your family over the years went to the U.S. to find a better land, a promising land, greener pastures. What does a change or a reckoning mean for you, your family that may still be there, the unrest, the unease, the issues that may affect your family still living there? Not the pre-existing conditions in healthcare, but things like abortion and same-sex relations, etc. What about the brain gain from all those students, particularly those on front of our papers over the last couple of weeks, looking at their CSE results? When they get scholarships, which country do they mostly go to find universities? All of these are things that we want to consider. And of course, when we have topics like this, we bring in our own resident political analyst, Mr. Wickham. And I want to flag these things before we bring in Ras Pete, as I'm going to call him today. When I look at the exit polls, Peter, one of the things that I look at is issues. You know, there's a lot of distraction and chatter, as our good friend used to call it, the chatterati. You know, when you ignore that and you press down to the issues, one of the things that I recognize in the exit polls, the early exit polls, it showed that a Trump voter cared at the level of 3% for things like the racial unrest. Well, it was the number one issue for some of the Biden supporters at 36%. Mm. The economy was number one purportedly from the Trumpers, and for Biden it was the number four issue. They didn't look at coronavirus, but the Biden voter looked at coronavirus. Climate change was at the second last. The race was last for the Trump voter, whereas the Biden voter was more interested in climate change, and then law and order was number two or three for the Trump voter. So these issues, for me, is where it was at, looking at all of this distraction. But at 5 minutes after 10, let me officially welcome Mr. Peter Wickham. And I'd like to, of course, and I'm sure a lot of persons in Barbados would like to get your early take on the stalemate that is the U.S. elections at this time.
All right, Corey, morning, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to share your time. I always appreciate when I'm able to make an incursion into the other radio call-in shows time on the air. So thanks for giving me a few minutes this morning. No, I was shocked this morning. I wanted to avoid a long night. So bearing in mind the time difference, I went in early and I got up. Just in time to basically hear that actually when I woke up, Trump was leading, and it was inconsistent with my expectations. And it didn't take long before I realized that he was not going to be declared president on the night. This is Biden, which is unfortunate because I had always felt that it is important to send a signal to Trump that he'd be beaten badly And my feeling is that the makings of that was there because the polls were showing significant leads and whatnot. What I'm realizing now is that a lot of the leads that we were seeing are leads in places that will materialize, but materialize based on the voters who voted before, the early voters, the postal voters, and all of those ballots still have to be counted. So therein lies the challenge where that is concerned. So I still think that he will win, but it's just going to take a bit longer. But you made a powerful statement just now when you talked about the fact that basically the difference in terms of what people want, because the Trump's supporter could care less about COVID and about climate change and those things, but the Biden supporter does. The Trump supporter is usually interested in guns and the economy, and even the economy. I mean, I can't quite understand how a person could feel that Trump would do better for the economy than Biden, because he is a loose cannon. You know, and this is a challenge that I struggling to understand why someone who means well will go to vote for him. I listened to one guy who was interviewed after coming out of a polling station, and he said that he voted for Trump because he felt that Trump would allow him to keep his guns while he figured that Biden would take them away. The curious thing is that a lot of these people don't realize that it is the easy access to guns that is causing all of these problems in the United States with all of these gun crimes and killings and people going into schools and opening up and whatnot. But they don't seem to be responding to that. So I guess the lesson that we can take away from this election are several. One of them is clearly that people have different reasons for voting. That is a basic understanding. People are not deep thinkers in relation to issues, and I think that that's where Trump wins every time, because his messages are very simple, straightforward, boring, but nonetheless, you know, it's about that. This belief that we have that because Obama speaks better and he can stand and he can philosophize and speak and whatnot, that will win votes is also something that we have to begin to question, because people were going to Trump rallies, and I think to myself, I mean, why would you go to a Trump rally? Because he doesn't say anything inspiring, but ultimately, you know, that's the kind of thing that he was getting. But what I'm particularly fascinated about, though, is the fact that in a COVID situation, America was able to deploy such a large number of people, because you realize that their election is going in a completely different direction to all of the others we have had in the Caribbean with the low voter turnout. Theirs has gone up, and their voter turnout has gone up because people can vote by mail. They can do drop-off voting. They have curbside balloting. They have postal voting, as I said, was one that they have. And then they also have early voting. So people have been voting for the last couple of weeks in this early voting thing, which gives people opportunities to cast the ballots. I think if there's a lesson in this, that's something that we can learn from. Because as we seek to bring our participation levels up, we may want to think about alternative methods of being able to cast your ballot that would preserve the integrity of the system, but would also allow people to vote in those kind of ways. But so suffice to say, Corey, I was a bit shocked and still am. I'm still feeling that he's on course to victory, but the idea of an early win, which was important to send a signal to Trump, has not happened. And as a result, he's already talking about going to court this afternoon and doing all kinds of strange things to preserve a victory that he didn't have in the first place, at least not yet.
I agree with most of what you said just now. The only thing I would challenge, Peter, is Trump being boring. There's nothing boring about Trump or a Trump rally. Mm. It is free entertainment with no ticket or admission fee required. Mm. I don't think you ever follow a good Trump rally. Mm-mm. He is hilarious. People call him the showman. And yeah, he's very funny and very entertaining. And as you say, he gets the message across in a very, very, very neat way. But that is not the important part. The important part that you mentioned I want to pick up on is the signal. And the signal for me is not only to Trump, but to Trump supporters. I believe that a signal should have been sent to them on particular issues in terms of how things were treated, in terms of the violence, the encouraging the violence, the making of support, the disabled, etc. We need that repudiated and repudiated soundly. And that we've missed the boat on that from a global level. But the more important part, the number one question I have for you this morning really has to do with polls and polling. And I think you answered part of it when you talked about the fact that the polling may more be connected to the votes that are not counted as yet. Because I could see this could be a death deal for polling if this goes wrong, because it would have been noted as the second time. It turns out people receive polls. For instance, a lot of people talk about the polls from 2016 and say they were wrong. Mm-hmm. But the reality is it was pretty close in terms, I think they predicted a 3.1 popular vote and Hillary got like 2.3. So it wasn't that far off, but it is the end result. So it's the analysis of the polls as opposed to the numbers itself. I would like you to give a message to those out there this morning saying polling is dead. The polling was off, because I've heard a lot of it on the networks, that the pollsters and the polling got it wrong and that this is the death of polling now.
Mm-hmm. Polling ain't gonna die so easy. And you know a lot of people would like it to, but it ain't gonna die so easy. Look, the realities of a poll are very simple. The polls that Cadres conducted in 2013 were within the margin of error. But in many instances, the margin of error is insufficient because you're looking at elections that are too tight. The polls that we conducted in the 2018 election were not within the margin of error because they were showing a Barbados Labour Party landslide. The difference is that it was easier to be right in 2018 than it was in 2013, because in 2018, the election was a landslide. And I mean, almost anybody could predict a landslide, you know. And that's the problem. Elections in the United States of America now, when you are winning by 2 or 3% more than the person, it's hard to predict that in a poll because that is within the margin of error of a poll. So a poll that is giving you a 5% margin of error, which is what most polls do, is useless to you when your margin of victory is really right there. And the other thing is that if you do a poll tonight, it is possible in a place in the United States that public opinion could shift for tomorrow. So I know that people are always anxious to jump up and down on the pollsters. Quite frankly, in Hillary Clinton's thing, the pollsters were correct because the pollsters were showing at the national level that she would have won, and she won at the national level. Within the states that she lost, a lot of them didn't do, and they admitted that they didn't do polling in those places because they didn't think it was necessary. It'd be like polling in St. George North. It ain't nothing that you need to do because you know what the outcome will be. And they got a shock. Now, that's the challenge that I think people have to understand. This time around, for example, Wisconsin was a place where Biden was polling and polling well. Now that they are counting up the postal ballots, they're saying that they are getting to a distance that was consistent with what the polls were showing. Because when you say to a person, how will you vote? That person could tell you, I'm voting Biden, but they're not going to say, well, I can vote Biden on the election day or I can vote before. So I think that's the thing. And I think we need to have the conversation about polling probably after all of those results are in. I know in the case of Barbados, it's difficult to make the comparison because there's only really one firm that does polling. And it's difficult to make the comparison too. But what I can say is from my experience, Corey, whenever we have had close elections in the region and clients published polls against my better judgment, a lot of times, you know, you see something that comes out that's different and you can try as best to explain to people that there's something called a margin of error, but they're not interested. You know,
my thing is, when you think, and this is like asking a fisherman to say his fish stinks, but let me ask you this, when you consider that these things can change at the 11th hour, and then this whole idea about the polling, like for instance in the US, where people say a lot of the Trump supporters are silent voters and a lot of them lie to pollsters, therefore it throws off the polls, so polls are really useless. How do you respond to that?
But that's something that you have to get in your methodology. Now, the thing about it is who's doing it, huh? Because the internal polls within the different camps, you will never know because they don't publish them, right? The media has their polling companies and they do their polls for their own reason, and they always publish theirs, as they should. When you're looking at the technique, for example, in the case of Barbados, there's something called a governmental bias. And I have demonstrated by reference to polls that I have done over the years that there is, I think it is 1.5 to 2% likelihood that a person will lie and tell you that they're voting for the government when they're not. Because they are lying in basically the work for government and they're afraid that somebody might go and say. So I've been able to work out that looking at polls and looking at results that there's this governmental bias. At the same time, it relates more to when the BLP is in power than when the DLP is in power. Because I have always gotten the impression that more public servants were Dems than Bs, right? So that's one of the things. Now, I'm saying that at my own limited level, with my limited capacity, I can work out things like that. I do feel that those firms in the United States have to become more sophisticated in terms of their techniques, in terms of understanding the difference between a cell phone call and a landline call, who you target in relation to each area, and how you draw your sample. And they can get to a point where they eliminate or reduce a lot of that significantly over time. But they have to take on that challenge. And I agree with you that you can't, it can't be business as usual because there are new dynamics. And those guys are a whole lot more sophisticated. They have budgets that they can do with that in terms of when they're sampling the methods and knowing what to do and what not to do. So they're on the ball.
Right. For me, I was looking at the Trafalgar poll, and one of the things, he was one of the few people who predicted it correctly in 2016. And one of the things he said, he looks at the issues as opposed to answering direct questions in terms of who you support. So if you see somebody and they don't support for, let's say, climate change, you will have a good idea who that person genuinely supports. So going to leave that one there. I know you're heavily in demand this morning, but I will let you to stay with me a few moments, take some calls with me. And I think so we can come back after the break and take a couple of calls with Peter Wickham. Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. We take our first call and say good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Corey. How are you, sir?
I am fine, thanks. And you, sir?
I'm okay. It's a pleasure. I want to start off by doing some thank yous to a few people. And not to worry, I have their permission to mention a name like yourself. I want to thank you for looking after our future people in this country. You're doing a tremendous job. And believe me when I tell you, it's follow what you're doing. When you turn a corner, it's no way you turn the corner. And you're doing a wonderful job. And thank you for that.
A little scary, but go ahead.
That's scary. Don't worry. I'm taunting you on that. And I just love what you do.
Thank you.
And someday I hope I can connect with you to contribute to what you're doing. Because I'm good in certain fields and stuff. Mr. David Ellis, for keeping this program alive and well, and the moderation is fantastic. Dennis Johnson, one of the best listeners and got so much knowledge. Thank him for keeping it up despite all the challenges he have with his health. Your guest, Mr. Peter Wickham, I knew him from way back when, from managing a restaurant on the West Coast. I always thought posting was craziness, but sticking and listening to him, following him, let me understand, you know what? This incense and all this madness that he does, and I want to thank him for keep educating people like me that understand a little what he does, how he as a black brother that progress, and I hope you keep up the good work and keep striving. Now, outside the radio, there's one more moderator I speak about just before you finish. It won't be long. But I want to say thank you to Chris Sinclair, the former MP for where I live, and the present MP, Mr. Neil Rowe, and his wonderful caring assistant, Michelle. They're, in this hard time, Corey, you know it's hard. I ain't going to tell you how hard it is. You know it's hard. Those people that I just called to you are have pushed out their hand, their head, their neck, their foot, and try to help people in all kind of ways. A couple of weeks ago, I was hopeless. I was ready to disappear and hide up under a rock. And I called into this program. Ms. Joanne Haig gave me a lead. She followed up on it. And she wake me up early in the mornings to follow up and direct me to Trust Loan. I want to see the people out there. Trust Loan can help. You just have to be patient, give them a chance, because they're fighting tooth and nail to help a lot of us that are unemployed, that got ideas and want to try something different, want to be entrepreneurs and everything. In that capacity, I want to thank Mr. Amos and his team, down at the Trust Loan, for giving me a little light at the end of the tunnel and keeping my hopes of being able to work for myself in not too far distant future. But Joanne, she's special. I've never come across nobody that I ain't meet nobody yet that want to help people, just like this man, Corey. I never met Corey there. I see you on TV, see you on road driving, hear from radio talking, never met you yet. But do you understand? You just pick up everything that is wrong and turn it into right and direct people. So I want people to understand, one, enjoy on coming to program. She ain't about BRDRC. She about helping people. She's a character, just like Corey, that this country needs up front and center. When is my politicians and all?
Yeah, we the radio MPs. But I want to also thank you. Let me add you to the list. I want to thank you for opening up the program and starting off on a positive note. You know, a lot of people say This is the place where people like to bellyache and complain. So it's always good to start on a positive note. Thank you and do enjoy the rest of your day. Brastats, good morning. You on the air?
Yeah, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
I have some questions.
Mm-hmm. What, we have the answers.
Yeah. But before I start, that foolish me is still waiting to hear everything that former Minister Travis Prescott and former Minister Anthony Wood have to tell the public of Barbados. I was made to understand in one instance this information would have been forthcoming in 2 weeks. 2 weeks have long gone. In the other instance, it was about the same. Nothing has been said. I hope the public of Barbados realize by now, because in this day and age, in a supposedly educated society, that people can be allowed people, by this day and age, by now it's happening, because people allow things to happen. In some cases, people can't think for themselves.
But that's something that Peter mentioned, you know, this whole ability to critical think and deeply think about issues. And it's something that concerned me for a while as well. Peter, actually, in the second part of my prefatory remarks, I actually had planned. I want to link something to what you were saying, Mr. P. I had a meeting with the Ministry of Education this week. I believe it was Wednesday last week. No, Monday this week. A day this week. I don't even know the days anymore. But the point that Mr. P is here raising is something I think you'll be very pleased about. This whole idea of education reform unit. And don't panic with people bringing people to pay people. I think it's going to exist a lot of persons like the head of exams and all these different people that are already existing there. The meeting was with the Minister of Education, the PS, the Chief Education Officer, head of exams, head of student services and support, etc. And a lot of the things we've been talking about for many years and what Mr. P is talking about now, this whole idea of introducing, you know, global citizen, 21st century thinking, critical thinking into the education, I think Mr. P will be very happy to know that that's the direction we're going. Because if you educate people in a particular way to just take, remember, regurgitate, learn to pass exams, as opposed to be thinking and communicating and being creative, etc., this is what you're going to get, P. You can get people promising things for 2 weeks for 10 years and people taking it all 10 years and beyond.
I think education is much more than going to a university and getting a degree. I think the real education is not about yourself, your history, where you come from, your culture. Mm-hmm. To me, that is real education.
Yep.
I received my real education. I'm not afraid to say this. When I started paying serious attention to Bob Marley's music, that's when I really became educated. And I can tell you this, when I saw him, the life of it. I didn't talk to the boy. He's a foolish man. But you know, sometimes you're caught in a situation where you're forced to sit down and listen, not hear.
But listen.
You understand?
And try to internalize.
No.
I think one of the things, let me flag you saying before you move on, is this whole idea when we mix up education and schooling. There's formal education, which is like schooling, and then there's education, which is the learning about life and things that relate to life and you. And I think we mix it up a lot. And that's why when people talk about education, we think just about those who went to school, primary, secondary, and tertiary.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I find every exam, you find all the heavy achievers, the big achievers, you want to go to the so-called big schools, man, highlighted. I want to say to those who were not highlighted, you are special. You see?
Hold on a minute, please.
It's a society that puts people at a disadvantage, right? Everybody is not good at... I'm going to use this as an example. I remember many years ago, more than 20 years, I was reading a paper, and there was this doctor that every time he gave the medical exam to become a qualified doctor, he failed each time. This doctor had performed over 50 illegal heart surgeries. No one died. You know, they wanted to lock him up. So because the person don't have the ability to write things that are impressive, that doesn't mean that they should be written off.
All right.
Well, that is my last point. I'm a first school. What is there going to be a replacement for those children who have special needs will be accommodated? The school was just shut down. So what have become of those children? We can't go and put them in other school just like that. Those children request special education.
And that is why I was telling you, Pete. It goes beyond you just saying these people are special. I was pleased to report to you a first step where you have an entire room of the decision makers in the education field in this country saying, yes, you know what? It is time to go beyond, because that's not where we were a few years ago. When I went to that ministry and talk about education reform, and they say, you know what? Y'all just pick up these fancy terms. And there was no full acknowledgement that we need revolutionary reform in education. But now we have that. And Peter, I wanted on publicly on the radio right now for the country to hear, and nominating you to look at some type of committee where, you know, you, myself, Sandy, or Julie, I think, from Lockerbie and all, we discussed this thing about education reform. And I think that we must have some kind of standing. I don't want us a committee, because, you know, these committees do nothing a lot of the times. But something where we can influence that reform unit, where we can, you know, act as the civil society body, which kind of assess where they're doing and trying to add our voice to it, if not even invited formally. That's something I wanted to tell you on the program today, even before Mr. P raised that point. Yes. So, Mr. P, yes. I want to thank you. I'm not even going to ask for your response. It's almost, yeah, I have no choice. You have to accede to it, right? Thank you. Good. I get the thumbs up. Yeah. Moving on. Next caller, Brass Stats. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning and welcome. You're on Down to Brass Stats. Okay. Morning, welcome. Good morning and welcome to Brass Stats. You on the air? Yes, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
I am fine, thanks. And you?
Yeah. We had a burst fight in Hillaby Hill this week. And I want to say, they came and do it yesterday after losing so many gallons of water.
Good.
I know we have one a little further
from it.
And the water is here running again.
Barbados Water Authority, I hope you, they monitor the program for sure. And there's this particular call, person on WhatsApp from Lightfoot Lane as well. I can see they send a video, a 16-second video here every single day.
Yes.
And this has been going on for some time. I stroll back up, I could see all last month and so on. So Lightfoot Lane needs your attention, and also Hillaby. So
Moore's Bottom.
So
Moore's Bottom, yes.
They have that report.
The water is here flowing down the road again.
Moore's Bottom, Hillaby, and Lightfoot Lane, the city. So thank you, ma'am, and hopefully they can get to you very soon. Down to Brass Stats, good morning. You're on the air, 27 minutes before 11 o'clock. You're on the air.
All right. Hello?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
You're on the air live.
Yes. A question to the AG and to the Prime Minister of Barbados. I would like to know why it takes so long for the island constable to be being paid when they pay their come. It's frustrated. We have bills to pay, and after yesterday, no checks were printed for the island constables.
This is something I've actually seen throughout the press. And why I saw it is because I was looking at the role of the island constable. And what came up when I did my searches was that the island constables were featured in the media, you know, not getting the bus fare allowance, not getting this, not getting that. And it is part of a system where we have with nurses, prison officers, etc., a system that doesn't speak to efficiency in pay. It has to do with, from my understanding, the way how the system is set up about renewal of contracts, et cetera, et cetera. But now that I have you on the line, I just want to ask you one quick question, and that is to explain to people the role of the island constable in 2020.
My role as the island constable?
Yes, please.
We have our on the beaches that help prevent the beach bum from harassing the tourists.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. like temple, like was as a police officer.
Okay, so you work the beat on the beaches to keep the locals and tourists alike safe. I know there are NCC Rangers that would probably assist you guys with that as well. Any other specific tasks that you guys, because I see Island Constables out by like Hunt's Gardens, et cetera, et cetera. Are there any other specific tasks you'd like to share with the public, the Island Constables, the role that you guys play?
The role that we play is very, we mainly to help protect the peace and some of the robberies on the beaches and what's not.
Okay. All right. So I hope they're hearing your cry. We're trying to get the AG here as well. So I will add that to my list. I have a list of questions here generated for him from the program we had last Sunday or this Sunday. So I'm going to put that one to him as well. Thank you very much for calling. Brass, that's good morning. You're on the air. Remember, we got Peter Wickham here. And anybody want to talk politics early, we can get the expert while he's on the line. Good morning and welcome.
Hello, blessed morning, Corey.
Hey, blessed morning to you.
Peter, everyone else who's listening.
Hey, morning.
Hello?
That was Peter saying morning to you. Mm-hmm.
Hey, yeah. Okay. I don't know. Peter, how can you be so shocked about the results? I'm thinking that the system is really okay. There's Trump, there's Biden, but the world leaders. United States is seen as the world leaders, so there are people about them, as many as Hispanics and what do you call them, Latinos and Blacks and everyone that they're trying to get on their side, they still have the majority white. And we know they're looking out for their people. So whether it's Biden or whether it's Trump, okay, it is going to be, well, a little shift here and a little shift there, but much is not really going to change. And therefore, this time I'm saying it, just putting my personal guess on it, right? So I'm not shocked that Biden, that is like neck and neck on that there. People are looking for a landslide. I really wasn't looking for a landslide. So there's another question I want to ask you, Peter, about your response to that.
But the one thing that you said that was interesting is you talked about Latinos and Blacks and so on, but I mean, if you look at the results in Florida, Florida is a heavily Latino community, and Trump won Florida, which means that he clearly does have the support of Latinos. When several of the Latinos who voted for him were asked why they would have voted for him, many of them said they voted for him because of the fact that he disassociates himself from socialism, and they are concerned about socialism coming out of Venezuela and coming out of Cuba, which demonstrates that people have some bizarre reasons for voting. I think that I could be excused for expecting a landslide. I have never really spoken to a person who supports Trump. You know, I don't really know. I have not. No, I mean, there are a few people that you will meet online that will say, oh, you know, I feel he can win. But in terms of having a conversation with someone who honestly feels that Trump would make a better president, I've not really heard those words spoken from anyone. So it's easy to be lulled into this view that he would make a better president, because pretty much everyone that you speak to understands the extent to which he is easily the most destructive president that America has ever had.
But, you know, it shows us then that he has a lot of persons agreeing with him, especially white, because he's looking out for their best interest.
I'm talking about white people too, because I got friends that are white. And I'm saying that there are people who I speak to online, people who I know they're white, and they are angrier than me at him. So he is appealing to a particular...
You find it analysis is that he is looking out for them, whether they love him or not. That is how they might see it deep down.
I think it's important to remember that white people are not a homogenous group, right? But the people that do support him see him as a person looking out for America first. They've bought into that, you know, keeping the guns and different things like that.
Yeah.
And remember, he has over, I think, 64 million votes in already. That is not no flash in the pan. So he's obviously convinced a large segment of the American population that what he is doing is best. Again, one of the early poll things I didn't touch on, Peter, is that 18% of the people who supported Trump coming out of the exit poll said that they care about, you know, things about character and behavior and so on. They are saying that they're more interested in the issues and what he's doing. They don't care about, you know, the porn star and all these things that other people get caught up with. They have no interest in him personally. They have interest in what he's going to do for America. So just want to fly that in there.
Peter?
Trump, I'm listening.
Trump, okay. What is the difference between the Latino and the Hispanic? What is the big difference between them?
I guess it's where they come from. Because a person that comes from Venezuela, a person that comes from Cuba, a person that comes from Mexico, or indeed from Colombia or one of those other places, or Nicaragua, they all look the same. Uh-huh. But they refer to them in different ways. So it may very well be the source of the person. Because ultimately, they're all of similar Latino or Hispanic origin. But... And they all speak Spanish, so technically speaking, they're all Hispanic. But generally speaking, it is more a question of where they come from. And the reality is that they do have different values, because someone was saying today, one of the analysts was saying that it's true that the person that comes out of Cuba or comes out of Venezuela has different views and priorities to the person that comes out of Nicaragua, you know?
And so, some of them have links with Spain, right? Some of them do, like Hispanic.
With what, Ukraine? I don't know that that's a statement that we would want to engage, because it's like saying that because Corey is dark skinned and comes from Black Rock that he is more likely
to have links with Crane. I heard some historians say that Castro was actually Hispanic or he was Portuguese.
We wouldn't say that though. We wouldn't say that.
Oh. All right. Lastly, we can see Trump as the worst thing that ever happened, or we can see him as the best thing that ever happened, because pertaining to blacks and what we think we have had liberty in since Martin Luther King and so on, it has shown that nothing much has changed, and we have to really have a reset and a really look out for our, not just for ourselves, but to know where we stand and work towards the goal of freedom. Spiritually and everything.
All right. Thank you, Carla. Peter, we're going to take a break. When I come back on the WhatsApp, there's some questions for you. I'll give you an opportunity to actually think about one of the questions. It says, good morning. Could you ask Peter what makes President Trump a bad president? Welcome to the Brass Tacks Sunday, the Wednesday edition. And Peter, the question, what makes Trump a bad president is the question that the WhatsApper here is asking.
That's a long question. To start with, I like a leader that inspires me, and I listened to Obama a few days ago on the campaign trail, and I have to admit that I missed the days when you could be inspired by a prime minister, by a leader in that way. That type of inspiration has not been in the White House for a while, so that would be my first thing negative, that he doesn't communicate like Clinton or like Obama. Essentially, there's not a leader that appears to inspire. The second thing is that he tells lies and he is not transparent. He is convenient, you know, regarding whatever he says at different points in time. And I think that that's usually associated with a bad leader. But I think the main thing is that he doesn't have a commitment to any kind of policy where you can say that this is a president that was committed to something and that was able to deliver on something. I mean, Trump went in talking about building a wall. He's done nothing in that regard. He's been able to pass policies to ban Muslims from entering the United States. He's managed to irritate Black Lives Matter and to get that whole movement going, because they are now responding to the belief that race relations are in America at an all-time low. He has essentially brought America's death toll in terms of COVID to record levels. I mean, I struggle to understand why someone would want to vote for him, because to me, there doesn't seem to be a lot in terms of achievements that he can point to that are good and stellar.
Let me ask you this question, as unfair as it may be. When you, in terms of get your daily digest of news or so on, are you one of these people who you would say taking a lot more liberal media at his turn, like, you know, the CNN, the NBC, mm-hmm. the MSDNC, as they call it, or do you take your diet from a variety of places, left and right leaning?
I mean, I don't have access to Fox up here in France, which is just as well, because I find that when I listen to Fox, I feel nauseous. So I get my information from CNN, from Al Jazeera, BBC, and Sky. Those are the basic sources. And I know that CNN has had some challenges recently, but by and large, that those are the sources that I follow.
Mm-hmm. The reason I ask that is that because people tell us, usually when we have or we share these views, is that we live in an echo chamber, a bubble that leads us to believe these things. But if you look at that Trump, when Trump said he's the best president for black people since Lincoln and so on, it is really the fact of the measures. So forget the man for a minute and look at the measures, the second chance program or something, where a number of incarcerated black was able to come out and make something of themselves, and they point to specific policies as opposed to characteristics. And they say to people like you, you're in the echo chamber, you're following liberal media, and that is what you don't understand.
And I don't disagree with that. That's one of the reasons why I enjoy doing the call-in program so much. Because when I was teaching at the university and I used to come down to do the call-in program by the riverside, you know, it used to introduce me to real life. So I always tell people, if you want to understand what real life is, come on a call-in program. So yeah, I get that. But even at the level of the ordinary person, I still struggle to understand what exactly it is that people identify with. You know, you were talking about how, you know, the meetings are sporty and stuff, and he'd give jokes and that kind of thing. You know, I remember when I was younger, I used to go and listen to Eric Flay, right? Mm-hmm. Eric Flay with Monk and Meehan in Baxter's Road and Kaswe half of Barbados and tell lies for people and slander people's name and whatnot. And it was entertaining. But I think, frankly, I understood that when I went into the Independence Square to hear Al Barrow, or when I listened to Tom Adams, you were getting a different kind of conversation. So I understand that people like that have the utility, but you don't make them president.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. This one says, in all fairness, Peter, Trump inspires. Just ask any proud boy. Good morning and welcome to Brass Stacks. You're on the air. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning to Corey Lane and to Mr. Wickham.
Good morning. Two for the price of one, Alvin.
Good morning, sir, Alvin. How are you?
Now, I hope that you have already placed your order.
Yeah, I was about to say, my partner sounds buddy.
I think that a man in your profession would know how St. George is right now. I ain't going into it because they say no campaigning on the station. But I hope that you have started. Yeah, you know.
And Peter, I want pictures of you eating this partner sauce. I want pictures. I want video. I want video.
Okay. Now, Mr. Wickham, over 2 years ago, you and I had a conversation, I don't know if you remember, because I know I don't have much, but I could study and keep things in my head for a long, long time. I had a conversation with you with American politics and Trump. And I explained to you that to be speaking about the popular vote in a way like if Miss Clinton was robbed of the election, because that's the way you put it over at that time. And I explained to you at that time that in Barbados, a party could lose the election and have the most popular vote because it's by the constituency. You remember that conversation?
Yeah, I remember it.
Now, why are you still sticking to this popular vote in America?
I'm not sticking to the popular vote because the point is that in order to win a state, you have to get a majority of voters in that state behind you. And my struggle is not only to understand how he has never gotten a majority of voters nationally behind him, how it is that he's able to get a majority of voters in different states behind him.
But I know.
Because lightning don't strike twice in the same place, you know. And this thing that he got elected on last time around has only happened twice before in the long history of America. But yet still.
I know that you know that Gore got the popular vote. You know Miss Clinton got the popular vote. And both of them lost.
But why told you it happened three times in American history.
Okay. You know
the Clinton, the Gore, and once before. So I'm saying that the likelihood of it happening this time is lower for that reason.
You know that in 2016, Miss Clinton got 66 million odd and Trump got 63 million odd. Because when you hear people speaking about this gentleman that is an idiot and he's this and all, you won't believe that in the last, in 2016, 63 plus voters for this man, or 63 million people. And the other gentleman at that time used to call supporting him, the prime man, Mr. Wiggins. And people couldn't understand why Mr. Wiggins supports Trump. No, I will say support Trump, but I admire the man. And I can tell you why I admire the man and someone in your profession, should admire him too, instead of being critical of him all the time. Because if you follow Trump, let's say in 2014, because you should be following that if I'm following it. I don't make a living from it. You do. Trump get rid of about 17 governors and senators. You remember that?
Yep.
Mr. Wickham?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Wickham?
I'm hearing you. Go ahead, Alvin.
He destroyed 17 governors and senators and things like that to become the candidate for the Republican Party in election in 2016. Then he turned around and defeated the most popular lady in America where politics is concerned, Ms. Clinton. In this election that they now had, whereby I give up that he's going to get beat. In other words, I know he didn't get beat so much. They didn't sleep about 9 o'clock last night. When I wake up this morning and I hear the whole, I was shocked. And then a man in your position who may have listened to it. How you could be sick with the size of the man?
But I don't understand, Alvin, what you're saying, right? I study politicians, and I study political leaders. I never read Mein Kampf, but I study Hitler because it's important to understand how people like Hitler get where they are. So there's no question that Trump is a study in communication. And before Trump, I studied George Bush. I studied George Bush. George Bush was the first man with a criminal record that was able to become president of the United States.
Mr. Wickham, you're dodging the bullet, man.
I'm not dodging the bullet. I'm telling you that there's a difference between...
Oh, you can put Hitler with Trump.
There's a difference between me...
All Trump to do is talk a lot of foolishness. Trump never organized... Trump never organized to kill thousands of people.
There's a difference between... 350,000 in the...
But what I'm trying to do...
350,000 are dead from corona.
This is the thing that I tell you, that you got to forget... With your profession, you got to deal with things in the right way instead of because you may not appreciate a person. Now, how can you blame Trump for the 230,000 people that died in America?
I guess it's not his fault. Look, Alvin, I would say very simply to you, if you will let me finish, what I was saying to you is that there's a difference between studying someone and trying to understand the person's mode of operation and admiring them. I will study Trump, and I have already. I have no intention of admiring him because I think that his brand of politics is not attractive to me. I don't want to emulate or follow or do anything the way that Trump does it because it speaks to a level, as when Biden said, the heart and the soul of the nation has been lost under Trump. So okay. A person like that, I don't see that I would want to admire them.
Okay, you don't want to admire, but let me...
And I'm surprised that you do.
Listen to what I'm saying to you today. With Ms. Clinton, you got 63 million plus. At the moment, they still have about 5 states expect to declare, right? And you got 60, $54 million already. He gathered more African Americans this time than against Miss Clinton. This detention is totally public, cause
That's not true. Of course,
that's not what true.
That's
not
true.
He got more Hispanics. He got more. The only area that he dropped.
Yeah, but Hispanics are not black people, huh?
The only area, as far as I hear on the BBC, I hear it from you because you listen to you this morning too. The only area that at this time Trump haven't done better is against is with the white Americans. All the others, he improved. In other words, he got 64 million right now instead of 33, and there's still got 5 states to come. And let me explain to you that you, as a person in your profession, start studying who you like and who you don't like and deal with the figures and statistics,
even
the things that there to educate people.
Honestly, Alvin, I don't know that we can get anywhere with this because you feel that I need to focus more on Trump, and I can tell you that I have no interest.
I
understand how he operates, and I think that that's enough.
Oh, let me get to Corey. Because you come back Friday, I will come back to you Friday. Finish you up.
Finish you up. Polish you up. I love it.
Let me get to court.
I will stand back and stand by for that one, Peter. Yes, Alvin.
You might not be able to answer this question directly. But being with your ranch in St. Joseph, not far from St. Andrews, I believe you could help me. Is it true that that mini polyclinic that I have made it possible that those yesterday, children in St. Andrew will have to go all over to Warren and take for the repeat medicine to take. Is it true? It's closed?
I'm not sure. The ranch is actually in St. Andrew. If you look at it, it kind of borders like 3 different parishes. But I'm not sure if it's closed at this time.
Well, I want you to check it out to me. Mm. And I don't think you got to wait till tomorrow.
No, I could probably send a message or somebody could message me.
What I'm saying is this here. And it's a bug in my head. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Wickham will not miss Mr. Wickham and persons like him that will be on top of this before your last election is silent.
There's something I want you to reconcile for me though. I heard you on Slam yesterday, and I could call it, and then today again with this whole idea that everything that goes wrong, the people saying it's Trump, the blaming Trump, like everything is Trump. But when I listen to you as a political commentator on the ear, you will get the impression that anything that goes wrong in this time would be the Barbados Labour Party or PM Motley. So what's the difference between America and Trump in that respect to you?
Now, may I ask a question? I answer this. What I am saying, all the news media all over the world, not only in America, if Trump
But you dodging the question. No, I asked you a very specific question. What you saying has nothing, no connection, or does not make contact with the question I asked you. What's the difference? For instance, you're saying everything America ain't Trump. Everyone is saying that everything in America is Trump fault.
But this what I'm talking
but
about.
But in Barbados, to us here and political commentators, everything is the government or the butt stops at the prime minister. So I want to know what you did. What was the difference for you?
I live here. And the mini polyclinic that I'm speaking about, I work on it.
Right, I understand that. You're not understanding what I'm asking you?
Yeah, I understand, but let me get to the point.
You just don't answer it.
I could answer anything.
Okay.
What I am saying is this. Now, when I was working on that polyclinic, getting it ready to serve, as I said yesterday, children of the area, person just come there and they were so excited to knowing that they don't have to get to Warren or give somebody money to get the medicine repeat from Warren. And I only asking you, if it's closed, why? Because when I want to, when I ask...
What's the name of this polyclinic you're talking about? You know his name?
No, you know Miss Rock used to operate from? Yeah, that gas station, Little Mini Mart, is still after you pass the soil
conservation unit, yeah.
Yeah. It's on the same hand as there, Mr. Rock. Business used to function.
I know they moved out a lot of things from there, the post office. I ain't sure about that. I know the police station gone for sure. Yeah, all of those were amalgamated in the complex out there by Beast Bottle and King Garden.
I can't believe they removed the polyclinic.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it's no longer operating.
Hmm.
The last government that people say ain't do nothing felt within themselves that those people needed assistance and put that there. I'm not talking about 12, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old thing. I work on it, and if anybody know the company that I work for here, we do outstanding work. We leave a nice little policy there to help the people of St. Andrew.
Well, I would get, I would check on it, and I'm sure somebody will message
in. And I am saying this.
Mm-hmm.
The body told me close because he ain't got no money. And this is what I'm saying. The body who gave me the news, because you, you don't get much news, you get it. I hope you don't get like Peter Wickham. Because you don't get nothing now.
Michael, you finish up Peter Friday, man. You leave out Peter for now. Finish him up on Friday, man.
What I'm saying is,
Mortal Kombat, finish him.
And I don't understand. Now, we now push down a national insurance building, a fire station, a historic place, and a temporary market. I want to know where the money came from to push down that.
Mm-hmm.
We can move Nelson. Where the money coming from to move Nelson? We paying a man $27,000 a month. Where that money coming from? If all this money is not, it's not about St. George at all. Because if you pass through St. George, you will wonder if the NCC, the sanitation, Barbados National Housing Corporation, all them workers in that area right now.
Mm-hmm.
But you may can't keep that little public clinic open.
But Alvin, I can tell you, like I told people under the last administration, I can tell them under this administration, where the money is come from is taxes mainly, right? It's going to the treasury. Then there's got something called estimates and a budget, and it is decide where the money going on. It don't be where the money coming from, you know. You hold on, let me answer, right? It is be priority. So you see, like, where the money coming from to send back people to university, West Indies? The money's always be there. I was always tell people, you know, government does collect X amount in taxes. But just let me finish now. What has happened is government then determines what are their priorities. Are we going to fix the road? Are we going to keep this building going? Are we going to let people go to university or not? It is about priority for different administration. But you know where money coming from? You, me, Dennis, Peter, all one of that listening. In VAT, indirect tax, that's where money coming from.
So are you saying, Mr. Lane, as you know all of that, the people in Sinaja don't pay taxes?
Yes, they do.
So why, you know that everything in Sinaja, and they tell about...
But listen, but you heard me on this very program talk that I think the people like White Hill. I imagine they had a point in time when White Hill didn't get no buses, no sanitation, no water, no electricity. Okay, I said, like, they shouldn't be paying the taxes. They should be getting refunds or something. I used to say so. With the people that didn't get water for long, I used to say on this very station, they should not pay no. I'm glad you heard and remember that.
But what I'm saying is, this conversation I'm having with you, it really for the representative of St. Andrew, you know, Mr. Payne.
Mm-hmm.
I am speaking that I'm hoping Miss Ford is hearing me. Because she is supposed to look after the yesterday's treasury. And
Miss Ford? Who, Miss Ford?
The minister.
Oh, you mean, oh, when you say yesterday, apparently you mean the elderly affairs.
I guess
you okay.
Look after the old people there yesterday. I just called them yesterday. You ever heard that clip say yesterday's reason?
No, please. I probably heard it, but I didn't pick up
on it. Listen to it. And I'm saying, if we could find money to do the things that is going on in Barbados right now, how much it take to keep that public clinic open?
Let me suggest something to you, Alvin. And this is where I believe in real democracy. The radio program like this, yes, to raise national issues. But like you, like representatives like yourself, in terms of you representing people right now. You are representative of the people right now. In terms of you're saying you representing yesterday's people right now, whether people want to admit it or like it or not, right?
Yeah.
But how I feel that these things should work, and it don't work that way. A lot of these people are seen as ministers and not necessarily MPs a lot of the time by people in the conversation. But understand this. I believe that people should go to the minister of yesterday's people, elderly affairs, and the representative for the area and lobby so that when cabinet discussions are going on and parliamentary discussions are going on, that these things are taken into consideration. Because the calling program, yes, has a value of making it, you know, something people can be aware of. But the real action happens in cabinet and parliament. And this is why people need to go to the representatives. And that is the job of the representative, to represent the issues in parliament and in cabinet to make things happen. So I agree with you. And that's the methodology, I believe, that those issues should be raised alone.
Well,
Definitely.
But Corey, I know that you know.
Just land the plane now, because the producer saying we got
it. I land it now.
Well, land it or get shoot, don't you? Go ahead.
I know that you know that the representatives hiding, nearly all of them.
I don't know about anybody hiding. Where you going to put that on?
If I know, you know, and let me tell Mr. Wickham before you go. Mr. Wickham?
I'm listening.
There's a particular place that does spend their money with VOB. I would let you, if you could start from Saturday, to start using your phone from there, L&M. The place is called L&M. I would let you, I will meet you there on Saturday to the first set of songs you can buy.
Jeez,
don't mind the day of 11th and get here yet. You could start before 11th. So let me know
if you're
going at L&M, right?
If we walk up and say, John, because that's my south spot.
Look, producer, we launched the missile and shoot down this player, like, book it down. 10 minutes after 11 o'clock, the next edition of Dota Brass Stats.